Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. This is Tim Reedy. I'm very pleased to be joined by Sir Gilbert Levine, also known as the Pope's Maestro. Welcome, Sir Gilbert.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, we've had you by once before, but this is for a very special event which we're celebrating, looking up towards the canonization of both John the 23rd and Pope John Paul II, somebody who you knew and had a relationship with, which we'll talk about. But first, I thought we'd talk about this concert, May 5th, happening at Georgetown University. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about it and how you're involved.
Well, I had been speaking with Cardinal Jivish, whom I knew very well, who was the private secretary to His Holiness, about the possibility that, as Cardinal Jivish said, His Holiness might be raised to the altar, and had thought about where might be a good place to do a musical celebration of that event. Because the language that John Paul came to use me for was my art, the art of music. And so I thought it was very important that his canonization be celebrated with a great concert. And I went to Cardinal Jivish originally and said, what about the idea of doing it in America? What about the idea of doing it in Washington? And he said, wonderful, and as is the way of the church, said, you really should speak with Cardinal Wuerl. So I went to His Eminence and suggested the idea of doing it in Washington, and he welcomed it immediately. And then the question became where to hold it, and I thought, in the spirit of my relationship with John Paul, in the spirit of Nostra Aetate, which I believe very, very powerfully in, and sort of John Paul, that it should be held in Constitution Hall, which Cardinal Wuerl welcomed immediately and said that he had actually celebrated Mass there, a youth Mass there. But it's also a place which just bespeaks our religious freedom, our religious liberty, our openness and tolerance to people of all faiths. And I thought it was really important that the concert be one that Orthodox Jews and Hindus and Muslims and people of all religious faiths could come and celebrate the canonization of these two extraordinary popes together in this American spirit. And through television, it would be broadcast around the world, but the issue was where to hold it. And Constitution Hall, really, and Washington were just perfect. And then what happened was really incredibly fortuitous that John Taglibu, a longtime correspondent for the New York Times, had written the foreword to my book, The Pope's Maestro. And his brother, Paul, is the chair of the board of Georgetown. And I sat down with Paul and I said, I would like to do this concert in Washington. Cardinal Wuerl has welcomed it. I need a wonderful partner in Washington to do this with. And he said, why not Georgetown? And through a series of meetings back and forth, I was introduced to Jack DeJoya, the president of Georgetown, and he welcomed it immediately. And began a broadening out. I should also say that I did a concert in May of last year, 2012, 2 years ago, to celebrate the beatification of John Paul in Chicago. And that concert was on PBS called Out of Many One, taken from the words of John Paul in his homily in Grant Park when he talked about E Pluribus Unum, our motto of taking the many and forming one unity. And that concert was on PBS, and it was screened at the Polish Embassy. And I've sort of skipped a step, because at that screening was the Polish ambassador, Richard Schnepf, His Eminence Cardinal Wuerl, and the Papal Nuncio, and Archbishop Vigano. And out of that screening also came the idea that Washington would be a perfect place to do it. And Ambassador Schnepf welcomed it. Cardinal Wuerl welcomed it, then Georgetown welcomed it, and then the Italian ambassador, and then the Argentinian ambassador in the spirit of Pope Francis, and of course, PBS, WETA, Sharon Rockefeller. So we have built an incredible coalition, an important coalition of Washingtonians, national institutions based in Washington, that welcomed this initiative, that understood that it was a wonderful, wonderful idea to celebrate what America did, which was to form an incredible affection for John Paul. And there are many, many people alive today, particularly in the Italian community, who view John the 23rd with deep, deep affection. And the thing that was really powerful was the connection, the genius that Pope Francis showed in connecting the two, in choosing to canonize John the 23rd with John Paul II. And one of the things that joined those two pontificates was Nostra Aetate. It began with the Vatican Council that John the 23rd initiated, although Paul VI was the one who actually promulgated Nostra Aetate. That idea came directly from John the 23rd. And of course, John Paul devoted an enormous amount of energy toward his outreach to other faiths. So our concert in Washington is called Peace Through Music in Our Age, which is a direct translation of Nostra Aetate, and it really is an attempt to reach out to all Americans in the spirit of joy that we all feel about the canonization of these two extraordinary popes.
Well, Sir Gilbert, maybe you could speak about some of the partners you've had in this venture, including Georgetown University, which, of course, is an institution we know well here at America.
Well, all these partners have been extraordinary and have brought very, very special gifts. The Polish ambassador has been indefatigable in bringing the Krakow Philharmonic Choir. The Italian and the Argentine embassies have been extraordinary in their devotion to this event. WETA, PBS, my partner of 25 years, has been extraordinary. I had never worked with Georgetown University. I find them to be an incredible partner. Jack DeGioia has been there at every turn, understanding what this was about, understanding what the place of Georgetown was in this, but also what the larger place was, working with Cardinal Wuerl, who has been a fantastic partner. As he was in 2004 for the Concert of Reconciliation, Cardinal Wuerl has been just an extraordinary partner. And to see Cardinal Wuerl and Georgetown coming together for what is an event simply about the goodness of mankind as exemplified by these two great popes has been a wonderful thing to see. I'm just delighted with the partners that have come together to make this concert the success I truly expect it will be.
And to have the Jesuit connection, of course, at the time of Pope Francis, that gives it an extra layer of richness.
Well, it's very important that the concert is in celebration of the canonizations of John the 23rd and John Paul II in the spirit of Pope Francis.
Sure, yeah.
And having a Jesuit university with the first Jesuit pope is an extraordinary thing. And they all have smiles on their faces because the fact is one of theirs, one of the Jesuits of their community, is now sitting on the throne of St. Peter and exemplifying in their view Jesuit values that they hold dear and that they've brought to this concert. As I say, though, the interesting thing is to see the Archdiocese of Washington and Georgetown come together in this wonderful way for the common good of this concert and for the glory of these two popes in the spirit of Pope Francis. For instance, the concert is free of charge in the spirit of Pope Francis. There will be people from Cristo Rey high schools in the spirit of Pope Francis. We will have elderly people who otherwise wouldn't be able to get there. They will be bussed in specially in the spirit of Pope Francis. And John Paul, I'm not saying that, but in the spirit of the least of these, serving the least of these, this concert of music to elevate the spirit will be available not only to people, millions of people on PBS and around the world on television, but also in the hall on the night to people who will be brought in by Georgetown, by the Archdiocese of Washington, to partake of this nourishment, the nourishment of the spirit that comes with this music in the spirit of Pope Francis.
Well, it sounds like it'll be a wonderful event, and we'll put up links for people who want to watch on PBS can look up their local affiliate. But beforehand, you're going to travel to Rome to be there for the canonization, so that must be a great way to start the celebration.
I can't believe it. I spent the better part of 17 years in Rome working with His Holiness on concerts of music and spirit, both at the Vatican and around the world. I was there for the tragic event of his death in 2005. Then I was there for the beatification. It's astonishing to be present, to be able to be present on April 27th in Rome for the canonization. I just am amazed. There was, if you remember, at the funeral, these banners that said Santo Subito, by acclamation, by acclamation of the people. And here we are so few years later, and he is being declared a saint, and many of us thought he was a saintly personage when he was alive, but it is extraordinary for the church and the world to recognize the great spirit that was John Paul and John the 23rd.
And maybe you can speak about how your relationship with Pope John Paul II first began.
1986 for the first time, February 1987. And at that time, I have to say, I was raised in Brooklyn in a Jewish neighborhood and had never met a Catholic priest in my life. And was asked to be music director of the Krakow Philharmonic and began that position in December of 1987. And it was a forbidding position, actually, because it was for two reasons. One, communism was very much in the ascendancy, is the wrong word, but it was strongly in power. So it was not a place to feel comfortable at all from a human point of view. And, of course, my family, being a Holocaust-related family, we lost 40 members of our family murdered in the Holocaust. So the idea of being 40 kilometers or whatever it is from Auschwitz was daunting in and of itself. But I wasn't in Krakow for 5 days in December when 1987 when I began my position, when I was invited to meet Archbishop Maharski, Cardinal Maharski, the Archbishop of Krakow, who was the Pope's successor as Archbishop in Krakow. The first priest I ever met in my life was Archbishop Maharski. And he welcomed me in an extraordinary way and said, "You know, Maestro, I know that if this interview had taken place 50 years ago, you would have been welcomed by the chief rabbi of Krakow. I am standing in his stead in the best way I can." And it was really an astonishing thing to say. And through a meandering series of questions asking me how I felt in Krakow, at the end of which half hour, he said to me, "You must tell all that you've told to me to the Holy Father." I have to tell you, I had no idea who he was referring to. I had never heard the locution in my life. And I went away for the Christmas vacation that year and came back in January, and on my desk in the third floor of the Krakow Philharmonic building was an envelope saying, "You will be free in the first week of February. You will go to Rome." And it gave me the name of two priests to call. And one had a 7-digit number, and the other had a 4-digit number. And I was sure when I went to Rome that the 7-digit number was more important than the 4-digit number. It made perfect sense to me. And I called the 7-digit number, and it didn't answer. It was the afternoon, and the Vatican on some days works only in the morning. And I called the 4-digit number. Lo and behold, it was the Vatican switchboard. And I mispronounced the name, and I asked for Father Dzivich. And the kindly sister first said, "Who gave you this name?" And I said, "Cardinal Maharski." She said, "Vediamo, we'll see." And I was put through to Father Dzivich, who was, of course, the private secretary of the Pope, who said, "I've been expecting your call. Would you come tomorrow to the bronze door?" And I said, "Where's that?" And he said, "Just ask downstairs at your hotel. Everybody knows where the bronze door is." And, of course, it's the entrance to the Apostolic Palace. And the next day, I went and saw Father Dzivich. That was the second priest I ever met in my life, who was the private secretary of His Holiness. And the third priest the next day was His Holiness. And I was told in the interim, because I wondered what kind of an audience I would have, I was told that I would have what's called a baciamano. The Pope would pass by in the Apostolic Palace. I would have a chance to greet him. There would be a picture taken. And I was told explicitly, "Don't prepare any words, you will not be able to say anything. The Pope will greet you, he will bless you, and he will move on to the next person." And I said, "Okay." Instead of that, I was ushered into his private library completely alone, and he received me, and the first words out of his mouth were, "I read about you in Newsweek. I know your whole story. We must talk." And it turned out, only years and years later, I learned that Cardinal Maharsky had cut out an article about me in Newsweek and brought it down to the Vatican the next time he went, and the Pope said, "What's new in Krakow? Sono vego. What's new?" They said, "Well, you wouldn't believe it. This American conductor has arrived in the middle of the Cold War. And here's the article." And so the Pope had read the Newsweek article and told Cardinal Maharsky, why don't you meet him and find out what sort of a fellow this is? Maybe if you find him interesting, I would like to meet him. And that began an astonishing relationship that I was sure, I wouldn't even call it a relationship, I was sure that this meeting, however miraculous it was the first and last time I would ever meet him. That whatever providential forces brought us together, this was a once-in-a-lifetime meeting for sure. And I have to say also that I felt an incredible fate about this with regard to the Holocaust, with regard to my being a Jew and being put in this position. And that since this was the last time I was going to ever see him, it being having been miraculous that I was being received in this way now, I said to him at some point in the meeting, I said, "Your Holiness, I believe that God put you on this earth to make things right between our two peoples." And he didn't say a word. He just looked down and was incredibly deep in thought for the longest time. And I was, of course, sure that this was the craziest thing one could have imagined saying, and that whatever had impelled him to invite me, he was now very much ready for me to leave. In any case, below his desk is a button that he stepped on, and many, many people came in, television cameras, people taking pictures. It became a very public, private audience. And he was still so discombobulated, evidently, by this audacity of what I said, that when a silver tray was brought in and my wife was there, and he was supposed to give me a papal medal of the year and she was to receive a rosary, he got them crossed in his arms. You could see his face was completely, he was still thinking about this. And someone from the Prefettura della Casa Pontificia came over and said, "No, Your Holiness, she gets the rosary and he gets the medal." And then he was going to the door of the private library and turned to me and said, "I will see you at your concert." I said, "What concert?" And he was gone. And Monsignor Givish, there are many, many rooms that are at right angles in the Apostolic Palace, and I exited through all those rooms, and Monsignor Givish took a shortcut and met me as I was about to enter the Sala Clementina and basically leave the private area of the Apostolic Palace. And he said, come era, how was it? And I said, "Incredible." And he repeated it, and he said to me, "The Holy Father wishes me to tell you, you have a great soul." And I was completely floored and left the Apostolic Palace. That I couldn't talk. And my wife kept saying, "What happened in there? What happened in there?" I said, I really don't know, and I don't know how to describe it to you. And then 6 months later, I was invited to conduct the concert for his 10th anniversary as Pope. And it began a 17-year relationship during which he came to understand that music could be a way, as he called it, to express ideas that he felt went beyond words. That in uniting people of different religions, sometimes you need something, a language, that goes beyond words, that transcends words. And it's the greatest honor imaginable for someone to have your art understood by a human being of such amplitude, such heart, such incredible spirit, and to find that he, who I think was looking for ways to do exactly that, to reach out to people of other faiths, that he came to believe that music was that way. And about 3 years later, I guess, 1991, I was planning a concert in the Postempova, the Temple Synagogue in Krakow. And for reasons I can't even begin to understand, I went back to Monsignor Dziwisz to talk to him about this concert. And immediately he took me across the Vatican and introduced me to the Pope again with Cardinal Lustiger of Paris at the time, mm-hmm. and began talking about this concert. And that started an idea in my head that maybe there was a purpose here, a higher purpose. And my having come from a Holocaust family and the Pope having seen the Holocaust firsthand, maybe there was a reason for this. And I went then to the Pope and I said, I would like to organize here in Rome a concert to commemorate the Shoah. And I used the Hebrew word. And I said, I would like to invite you. And he said, why in Rome? Why not here in the Vatican? And then he put out his hand and he said, if I reach out my hand, will there be a Jewish hand to meet mine? I said, you're asking me? He said, find out. I will do it. Mm-hmm. I will do it no matter what, but find out. And that was immediately, by the way, there was no discussion with five different Vatican committees. There was no, he just made a decision. He was going to do it. And in fact, he sent me to Cardinal Cassidy, who was the head of Catholic Jewish relations. Me, a Jewish conductor, went to the cardinal and said, the Pope has told me that there will be a concert to commemorate the Holocaust, and he's asked me to come to you to discuss it. If you want to see shock on a cardinal's face, it was Cardinal Cassidy, who had known nothing about this and was hearing about it not from the Pope, not from the Secretary of State, but from me. He was astonished. The most important thing is the vision was incredible. The Pope's understanding that this concert could be a way to reach out in the most powerful way to the Jewish community to make it clear that he wanted to reach out, that he wanted to form a bond with the Jewish people whom he called his elder brothers in faith, that this was something he was intent on doing. And the opposition, by the way, both in certain Catholic circles and certain Jewish circles, was amazing. They said, you can't do this. They said, it will set back Catholic-Jewish relations 50 years. And, of course, he knew that wasn't true. And he persevered, and that concert took place on Yom HaShoah, April 7th, 1994. It was on the front page of every newspaper. It was broadcast throughout the world. And from that moment, I remember giving a talk at Yale in 1991, and people said, why are you going to Poland? Why are you having anything? This was at Hillel. Why are you having anything to do with the Polish Catholic Church? After that concert, it was, well, of course, now we understand. And it changed everything. My job would have been to do a concert in Rome. His vision was to bring it into the Vatican, to make it a papal event, to make it history. And it was absolutely astonishing. And from that time on, we organized concerts together, both in Vatican and around the world, on this theme of unity among religions, reconciliation. I remember after 9/11, he could not believe that somebody had flown a plane into a building with the words, God is great, on his mouth. That was inconceivable to him, that one could kill in the name of God. So his outreach to Judaism was profound. And then, much before 9/11, he understood that an outreach to Islam was extremely important. For his 80th birthday, he asked me to do a concert, and I said, what would you like on the program? He said, your repertoire is broad. You come up with an idea. And I said, I would like to do Creation of Haydn, setting the first verses of Genesis before the division between Islam and Judaism, and Islam and Judaism and Christianity. And he said, that's perfect. So this is for his 80th birthday. He could have had a Te Deum, he could have had a Mass, he could have had anything he wanted. He wanted to reach out then to Islam, to find the brotherhood among the peoples of Abraham. in 2004, after 9/11, after the incredible difficulties of the Iraq War, which he was staunchly against, he wanted, again, I came to him and said, what about a concert of reconciliation? And in January 2004, we did that concert with then Bishop Worrall of Pittsburgh as a major figure in that concert, in the development of that concert. We brought the Pittsburgh Symphony, in fact, from Pittsburgh to the Vatican for that concert. And we had a choir from Ankara, Turkey. We had choir from Krakow, from London. It was an extraordinary event that again showed his incredible tenacity and fortitude in seeing this through. There was an invitation that was given to the Sheikh Al-Aqsa, who's the most important Sunni theologian in Sunni Islam in Egypt. And for whatever reason, he couldn't come. And people went to him and said, see, Your Holiness, this idea doesn't have merit. It really can't be. And he said, I have many titles. One of them is Bishop of Rome. So if I sit at this concert with the Chief Rabbi of Rome and the Imam of the Mosque of Rome, we are three adherents of these three great faiths. And he presided over that concert in that way, welcomed Islamic delegations to the concert. The two chief rabbis of Israel came to that concert. It was an incredible, it was a great part of what he felt, I believe, his pontificate could achieve. There were many other things in the Christian realm, of course, in the Catholic realm, that had nothing to do with this, but this was a huge part of what it was that I had the privilege to participate in, because music was the language he chose and thought would serve this purpose. And so for 17 years we did these concerts, and I've been doing them now in his memory, in his spirit, around the world since then, and this one in Washington is very, very, very special. I can't tell you how proud I am as an American that we're doing it in America, that it will be broadcast from America, that American religious liberty, our embrace of religious liberty, which goes back all the way to the Founding Fathers, will be represented so strongly in this concert, and as the spirit of John the 23rd and the spirit of John Paul come together in this way. I find it just absolutely wonderful that we're doing this in America for broadcast around the world. Just on that note, I also commissioned a piece for the 40th anniversary of Nostra Aetate called Washington Speaks, setting the words of Washington in these incredible letters that he wrote to diverse religious minorities, one of them to the Touro Synagogue in Newport, which is where my wife and I were married, talking about religious liberty, talking about how it's so important for the people of Abraham, as he called them, to find safety in America. And so this religious liberty that we are founded on and which we are now still forming our way toward is extremely important, goes back to the Founding Fathers, represented it today, and this concert is a celebration of that religious liberty and also of the incredible commitment of these two popes, who are now great, to that goal for the world, that brotherly love and acceptance and understanding among peoples of all faiths is at the root of peace. And peace is at the root of what I believe they believed God wished for mankind.
Well, you bring out some wonderful connections there between the two popes. And I think that's one we haven't talked about much, but I think is a very important one, and I hope will be discussed at the time of the canonization, both of their reaching out to people of other faiths and how that can be continued. This concert, how'd you go about choosing the music that you felt was appropriate for this occasion?
That's a great question, because music is the language.
Sure.
So we begin with Fanfare for the Common Man in tribute to Pope Francis, because Pope Francis' pontificate, I've had a smile on my face since election, I have to tell you. His whole pontificate has been reaching out to the common man. The fact that he lives in Casa Santa Marta.
Sure, yeah.
The fact that everything about him bespeaks his being at one with the least of these, What is our duty to the world if it's not the duty to the least of these? And he exemplifies that. And I'm not saying he's a common man, although probably he would say he was a common man, but his understanding of the common man is profound. And then we're doing two selections from the Verdi Requiem. Verdi was a northern Italian. He was commemorating the death of Manzoni, who was a northern Italian, in fact, not from a region not far from where John the 23rd was born, by the way, sure, in the Bergamo north region.
Yeah.
And the two sections are the Sanctus, which comes directly from Isaiah, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Sanctus, Sanctus, Sanctus is a direct translation from the Old Testament, from the Torah, to the Mass. So we're doing that section and the Agnus Dei for obvious reasons. And then we're doing Goretzky Totus Tuus, and Totus Tuus was John Paul's motto, and Goretzky was John Paul's favorite Polish composer. I did Goretzky, in fact, for the concert that John Paul, in fact, the Totus Tuus for the concert that John Paul and I organized in Krakow for the first anniversary of 9/11 in St. Peter and Paul Church in Krakow that was broadcast worldwide. So that's very clearly a tribute to the Marian John Paul, to the motto of John Paul. And then we're doing the Bernstein Chichester Psalms. So you had this Jewish composer, who, by the way, was the reason I became a conductor, the genius of Bernstein,
yeah,
greatest
sure.
American musical genius, in my judgment, wrote a setting of the Psalms in Hebrew for Chichester Cathedral, the Three Choirs Festival in an Anglican festival, Anglican cathedrals, setting the words of these incredible texts, which are as holy for Christians as they are for Jews, and in fact, by the way, to Muslims, they're holy texts as well. So we end the first half with an incredible psalm text, Hine Matov Umanaim, Shevet Achim Gam Yachad, may all the nations of the world come together as one. Absolutely gorgeously set by Bernstein. And then after the intermission, we do the 1,000-year-old Polish hymn, Bogorodzica, which is a Marian hymn, because Poland is a Marian country, that and John Paul was a Marian pope. And this I did this for the 1,000th anniversary of the Diocese of Krakow, by the way. 1,000th anniversary of a diocese. It's amazing. In 2000. In St. Mary's Basilica in Krakow, and I did it with the London Philharmonic Choir, and suddenly I turned around and the whole cathedral was standing and singing. Every single person in the church was singing. And then we end very, very importantly with music as universal language, the Brahms First Symphony, a majestic, uplifting piece that brings you from the turmoil of life's beginnings and the struggles of life to this an incredible, spiritually uplifting finale. John Paul would have loved this because he believed that music could transcend language. So we are without language and we are all together. All the diverse music that we've had up till that time is now a peroration to our unity in the Brahms First Symphony. And we have the Krakow Philharmonic Choir coming. We have the Orchestra of St. Luke's from Carnegie Hall here in New York that participated in the concert in the Basilica in Washington for the 40th anniversary of Nostra Aetate. We have the Washington Choral Arts Society. We have a soprano coming from Argentina. We have an Italian-American mezzo-soprano. And we have a boy singing the Chichester Psalms from St. Paul's Cathedral in London, flying over specially to participate. It's an international concert in our nation's capital to be broadcast to the world.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful event, and it's great that so many organizations are involved in the Archdiocese of Washington to Georgetown University. So we look forward to it, and we want to thank you so much for telling us about it and to hear from you again. Thank you,
Sir
Gilbert.
Thank you so much.